Hi, good afternoon, everyone. My name is Jennifer Cook. I'm co-director of the Africa program here at CSIS. And we're delighted this afternoon to have the Honorable John Robertson, who is a Member of Parliament from Glasgow Northwest, but perhaps more important for this context, chair of the All People's Party, Parliamentary Group on Nigeria. The APPG began initially focused on the Niger Delta in particular and was spurred by debates that Mr. Robertson participated in on gas flaring in the Delta, but since then has expanded its scope and its breadth to include looking at some of the political issues, looking at service delivery, and so forth. You should all have a copy of the report that they put out, which is an excellent excellent piece that focuses very much on the need for greater service delivery and education in water and electricity, still that strong focus on environmental and glass flaring issues, but also looking at corruption and accountability issues. And we'd love to hear your thoughts on the way forward on that. I think with gas prices as they are, Nigeria is making a whole lot of money at this point. And where do you find the openings for leverage on some of the corruption and accountability issues? I think it's a big challenge that we face. And I think the better cooperation among the international community on those issues, the better leverage we all have. So the APPG was founded in 2005, but continues strong. This most recent report was based on a trip in November of last year. And I think we'll have you open up with a little discussion, and we'll turn quickly to, I think there'll be some great questions and answers following. Okay. So welcome.
Thank you very much.
You may not need that.
Okay. This always reminds me of a joke where the speaker says, "Can you hear me up the back?" And the person at the back says, "Yes, but I am willing to move." So hopefully nobody's going to move, and hopefully you won't find this too boring. I have a written script here, which I've done. What we've tried to do in this is really condense what the APPG, it's a lot easier to say than the All-Party Parliamentary Group on Nigeria, and what we do and what we've done and some of the thoughts that we have, and hopefully we'll stimulate some kind of discussion, because the most important thing is actually to have some dialogue, because while I'm here to explain what the APPG does, I think it's much more important that we discuss where the US and the UK fit in with Nigeria and where we see all three going forward together in the future, and that at the end of the day is what it's all about. The idea for the APPG started about 2 years prior to the actual group being put together. A colleague of mine called Bill Tynan, who was the MP for Hamilton South, managed to get a debate in Westminster Hall on gas flaring. And me being his best pal, and also the fact that we were worried about an hour and a half debate, whether enough people would turn up to actually talk on it, we thought I'd better turn up and have a speech ready. As it turned out, I did participate, but there were a few people who turned up as well, so it was quite good. So it took off from there, and it's in effect taking on a world of its own. We have become quite political. As a matter of fact, some people would say we've become very political, but that was always going to be a natural evolution of the group from where we started. We started there to go and see and to look, and we still do that, but what we saw was not quite exactly as we anticipated it to be. And in the first visit, which nobody knew, as we got to places we shouldn't have gone to, talked to people we shouldn't have talked to, and did everything that a politician is not allowed to do. And needless to say, the Foreign Office in the UK were not too happy that we did what we did. But it was a very good grounding, and we were never, ever going to get the same opportunity again at any other visit, and we knew that. But we've now taken on a role of where we're much more influential on what we do. And we have a good rapport with the British Foreign Office and the British government. And we have an excellent rapport with many people in Nigeria, including those that hold certain offices. within government ranks, and I believe that we have a good working relationship with the new president, although trying to meet him is very difficult. He doesn't go about much. And the last time I went to see him, he came over here to see your president, so there you go. What chance do I have? But let me just go through bits and pieces that I've got here, and hopefully that will stimulate some thought. The thing I better say before I go any further is I am Scottish, you probably noticed. Not Polish, as the gentleman last night that asked me where I came from. And I'm from Glasgow, and Glasgow's in the west of Scotland. They have a very upsetting knack of, one, speaking too fast, and two, cutting their words very short. So, if I say something that nobody understands, don't worry, I will not be offended if you want to ask me what I said in English, and I will try to repeat it in the form of English that you do understand. Glaswegians are a very emotional group of people, and when they get emotional and there's two of them together, then there's no way you'll understand a word they say. So I just make that warning before we get any further. So let me go through what I've got in front of me, and hopefully that will stimulate discussion. First of all, I want to thank, obviously, the CSIS for inviting me here today. And I think it's important that it's not just a UK problem that happens in Africa in general, but that we all have, as the sort of senior members of the world, a role to play in helping nations that need help and those that are trying to strive for democracy. And that's what we hope that they're trying to do in Nigeria. But as chair of the group, as I said, I've been working on this for 5 years now. I came to Washington to meet those interested in Africa, as I've said, and to try and share the perspective of the APPG and what we're doing and what we hope to do in the future. I believe that Britain and the United States share a common goal when it comes to Nigeria. Nigeria is of cultural importance to the international community as it's Africa's most populous nation, a major contributor to peacekeeping efforts, Africa's biggest producer of oil, a huge potential market, a regional power, and a fledgling democracy. Now, the UK and Nigeria maintain strong relationships across various sectors, and we believe, by figures we know accurately, there is at least 1 million Nigerians living in the UK, but some say, counting the illegal immigration, it could be as many as 3 million. Nigeria is also, along with South Africa, one of the two main key partners in sub-Sahara Africa. I'm going to keep this brief because, like I said, I want to get as many questions and have stimulate discussions as we go. But basically, what I'm talking about is up to November, our last visit, and where we've been. Now, I want to talk about various things. The first key point I want to talk about it requires attention, and where the US and UK could be in support of Nigeria's democratic transition and with its current administration. We know that last year's April elections were deeply flawed and very disappointing. In fact, as they say where I come from, they were a shambles. The positive outcomes of the flawed elections have been the peaceful transfer from power from one civilian ruler to the next and the efficiency work by the election tribunals. The two real disappointments since the elections are, first, that the chair of the Independent National Electoral Commission, INEC, remains in his job. I have to say that I'm rather shocked that the chair won't admit that the elections were deeply flawed. In fact, he thought they were a great success. I hope that the Electoral Reform Committee, being set up by the President, will recommend the reform of INEC and the replacement of the leadership of that body. The second disappointment has been the electoral registration has not continued. If Nigeria is to have better or more complete electoral roll in its next elections in after that 2007 debacle, then registration must begin again and must be a continuous process. And I believe that the voter registration in this area, in which the US and UK could be of great assistance. When the group was last in Nigeria, people were waiting patiently for the president to start taking a more visible and proactive approach to leading the country. It's been surprising, but the actual president and the goodwill he's received and coming to power has been excellent. but as time is going on, it's starting to wane slightly. I believe the President is strong in his convictions, but the complexity of the system he has inherited relative to his lack of experience of federal-level politics is a constraint on him. Political life in Nigeria is complex, ferocious, risky, and corrupt. Political leadership is about knowing how everyone got to where they are, understanding what they want, and using it to manage people. This is where the President confronts difficulty, and this is why things have been moving so slowly. We're beginning to see a change here, though there is more and more, and there is more activity. Investigations, decisions, reversals of past deals, such as the probes into the power and oil sectors, the unbundling of Nigeria National Petroleum Corporation, and the recent introduction of the new tax regime on electricity as efforts continue for its development. The Ministry of Health resignations over the missing $2.5 million and others. President Yar'Adua is certainly more laissez-faire than his predecessor, but it does not mean he's disinterested. But the President does need support from international community, however. And I think both the US and the UK can help providing advice, not on what to reform, but on how to take those reforms forward that the President has identified as necessary. Despite concern over the decisions regarding the Economic and Financial Crimes Commission, EFCC, which has charged 8 former state governors since the last elections with corruption, the President is proving that he is serious about anti-corruption fight. This is the next area I would like to talk about. Due to its strong links with Britain, Nigeria's corruption and organised crime have strong links with the UK too. It was an embarrassment for Britain when it was revealed just how much of General Sani Abacha's loot was laundered through the British banks, estimated at something like $1.3 billion. Helping Nigeria tackle financial and organised crime is therefore a priority for the UK, and this is where, through cooperation with the US and the UK, we stand to make a real difference. Currently, the proceeds of crime of the London Metropolitan Police works closely with EFCC, because so much corrupt money from Nigeria has been laundered through the British banking system. Empowered by the 2002 Proceeds of Crime Act, the Metropolitan Police can investigate and prosecute non-nationals in the UK on money laundering charges. To date, the Met has frozen £4.5 million, about $90 million worth of assets. However, if the UK alone takes steps to prevent corruption, monies will filter through the system, and this money will simply end up elsewhere. And I have a feeling that the US is an attractive location. In addition to supporting investigations, the Metropolitan Police providing training for EFCC officers and staff, and the two share information on a regular basis. I believe that if a strong and efficient interdepartmental relationship can be established, a three-way sharing of information would be most effective in combating corruption and organised crime, the two of which, of course, are closely related. Organised crime is also linked to drug trafficking in the region of West Africa. Though geographically distant from the US, I believe that this is a key concern due to the possible link between funds obtained from this type of activity and radicalisation. Relations in the north of Nigeria and radicalisation is a third space which would benefit a great deal from enhanced US-UK-Nigeria engagement. It's important that we all tread cautiously when it comes to this issue. All I can say for certain on the issue of radicalisation is that the north of Nigeria suffers incredible poverty and everything that comes with it, ill health, lack of education and very low employment. Therefore, the north is an area where extremism may find a home. However, even currently, there is a hidden ongoing cultural battle between religious leaders on this very issue. I visited Kano State twice in the last two visits, and have had very positive meetings with traditional religious leaders. These relationships and that the UK needs to develop and are going to develop. I know the US released its country reports on terrorism last week, in which they determined that there were no conclusive links between Nigerian Taliban and the external groups such as Al-Qaeda, though it is acknowledged that due to its poverty, as I said earlier, the North could be a breeding ground for radicalism. So there's similar thinking on this subject. The Iraq War has affected northern Nigerians a great deal. However, when I was in Kano last November, I found that the people there to be very receptive, and indeed the people were optimistic about UK government involvement. I would very much like to see a combined diplomatic aid efforts focusing on poverty alleviation and improving relations, information flows and cultural understanding. The final area which enhanced cooperation would not only be beneficial but is essential is the Niger Delta crisis. We have seen recently the global impact this region has on oil prices, having reached almost $120 per barrel, it might even be more now, due to part of the mobile producing Nigeria strike action and the attacks on Shell pipelines. Though I'm not optimistic that in the short term that this crisis can be resolved, I think the right action now will produce the desirable results in years to come. The only way things in the Niger Delta can be permanently resolved is if people start seeing tangible changes around them, through diplomatic and public service delivery, and it needs to be federal and state governments who are visible in delivery. The Niger Delta Development Commission has recently finished three projects together worth over $1 million, and I hope that given its track record, they're better than the previous ones they've done. Britain's role at the moment is to support the President where needed on the Delta. Britain was approached last year to provide support to reform and train the police, and this may help to make this progress. Though development and the work in the Delta is constrained by the risk of corruption and the difficulties in monitoring activities and spending, I think there is a great deal the US and UK working together could do in the Delta. Both countries host oil companies that operate in the Delta region and carry part of the responsibility for the crisis in the Niger Delta itself. Pressure can be applied to the oil companies and federal and state governments to provide environmental standards and in particular to put an end to gas flaring. If we were as serious as we say about climate change, ending gas flaring in the Delta is certainly something worth putting resources into. Another opportunity for improvement in the Delta region is the capacity building at local government level to improve transparency, management and delivery. I believe that the UK and the US have an important role to play in supporting Nigeria and seeing it through these difficult changes. Enhanced cooperation and joint efforts benefit everybody. The pressure on African governments to manage different relationships is considerable, and it will take help to alleviate some of the pressure if external parties make coordinated approaches. This would also help Nigerian government departments which have to manage different expectations of assistance and performance from partners. In the long term, cooperation could also alleviate overstretched government and government departments in the US and the UK and create a more efficient and effective policy-making environment. Overall, I'm optimistic about Nigeria. I feel if it was going to implode, it would have done so already. I believe there is enough will there to keep the momentum moving forward, however slowly. It will not be a great change, it won't be done quickly, and it may take a few generations before we see any real tangible results. But given the will of all the people within Nigeria and those who have Nigeria in their hearts, I'm sure it will go forward. Thank you very much, and I look forward to the discussion and your comments.
Thank you. I guess we'll open it up for questions or comments. I mean, openings on the Delta, there was a very good session over at USIP last week on the Delta, Judy Asuni, Peter Lewis, I don't know if Peter's here today, and Darren Q. I mean, which I came away with actually much less optimistic, and kind of the idea being it's kind of in a stalemate where various groups are benefiting from the standoff in a way, that the militias are getting resources, they're able to outgun the police and military, political leaders are benefiting from the situation. Yar'Adua has been, despite early promises, has been a little bit arm's length on that. And I just wonder, where did your sense of kind of a new opportunity come from?
Yeah, well, I meet with various people, obviously, in the UK, and we hear rumours the same as everybody else. The Vice President, whose job it was to try and secure a deal with the militias and various henchmen in the Delta, hasn't produced anything, although there's been plenty of money being flung at it. The rumour is that there is a will at the moment from some of the militia leaders that they want to basically, I think, find a haven where they can go and spend the money they've now amassed. The fear, of course, always is that somebody else takes over from them. And that's one of the recommendations we've made in the report, is that the President needs to find something, no matter how small, that people can see as a tangible result of something being done to help them. A quick win, if you like, but some kind of project. Not a big win, one that must be able to be seen from start to finish and be seen to be working, and therefore sell it to the people that he represents. The one thing the President hasn't done is he hasn't been out meeting the people, and they don't know him. And he hasn't got experience in federal government, so he needs to get out there and he needs to let the people see that he's out there and doing things for them. If he does that, there's a lot of people in that country who have absolutely nothing. If, as I said to somebody, they have minus nothing, because they really do have absolutely horrible circumstances in living. They're bullied and treated badly by their own police force, and the opportunity to get out of the gutter is not great. So we've given them some kind of promise that there is a better life, then that's where I see the long term. Whether you take on these people on a gunfight, rumour is it, they've got better arms than the army. So you're not going to beat them in that one. And this is, I think, also where the international community come in. By supporting the President, then it gives them a standing within the country that other presidents haven't had. And I think that would help to promote him into the leader he needs to become, because he needs to sort out some of the people at high level before he even gets down to the bottom. So, yeah, I can understand why people aren't optimistic with the Delta, and honestly, I'm not that optimistic about it either. But they have to sort out their problems in leadership first before they're going to get down to the bottom. And the corruption is just unbelievable. I mean, the first time I went there, they tried to extort money at me, off me at the airport before I even got through customs. You know, it was just... And then the police set up a roadblock to extort more money out of us before we even were a mile within the country. So that's what we're up against. And the politicians don't help. There's absolutely no doubt about that. So it's a big challenge, but there's a job there to be done.
Thanks. Let's take a couple of questions from the group or comments. Yes, sir, and if you could introduce yourself.
I'm Bob Hershey. I'm a consultant. To what extent have you been able to use the Internet to get a bit more transparency in things?
Okay.
Yes.
My name is Robert St. George. I'm with the Whitaker Group. I was wondering if you had any other insight into where money might be going. You mentioned the funds that have been frozen in the UK. You mentioned that the US could be a host of opportunity. I was particularly wondering about Switzerland and maybe some of the more outlaw offshore banking centers like Cayman Islands, but particularly Switzerland, and whether anything's being done with that regard.
Well, it's very different. If you don't have any kind of jurisdiction over these countries, what can you do? The Proceeds of Crime Act that we introduced in 2002, I don't think we've had a discussion with somebody already about this. There isn't an equivalent of it, but there'll be some kind of way. But basically our police, if they have reason to believe that there's a criminal and he's made money on criminal activities, we can seize money. And it's not down for the police to prove that the money was ill-gotten. It's for the person who owned the money to prove that he got it legally. And if he can't prove he got it legally, then we keep it. And in the case of Nigerian money, we give it back to Nigeria. So it's very good. And we've met with many people on EFCC. Mr. Abado thought it was a great idea if some other countries in Europe in particular would take up a similar kind of law where you don't have to prove anything, you just have to have an idea that he's doing it. The way we found out was, one, we were tipped off that we're doing it, and the fact that one gentleman had bought five flats in London. Every single one of them cost over $2 million. So where did he get the money? Because he was only a member of Parliament in Nigeria. So we just took the money off him because he couldn't prove where he got it. And it went back to the Nigerian people. So that's that one. In the case of the internet, more people access... I just through the internet, and I think we access through them. The internet is something that we use. Lizzie, who sitting there, Lizzie does my Nigeria stuff. If somebody says, I have a real job to do, you know, other than this group, and I have other things to do than surf the net, but we do pick up a lot of information. It's amazing how our name was good. As I always tell everybody, I'm better known in Nigeria than I am in Glasgow. So it's amazing how people get to know you and they send you things. And the amount of emails I get on almost a daily basis of people telling me things that are happening. And then, of course, I send them to Lizzie to deal with it. But, yeah, the internet is one of these tools that are well used by everybody. Unfortunately, they're well used by those who use it to spread the illegal money all over the world. But, and it's, they're always one step ahead of us at the moment.
You brought up the Parliament, and I wonder how, have you seen evolution over time in engagement with the Assembly? I mean, my thought is, the turning down the third term issue is mm-hmm. kind of a mark of growing independence by the legislature, and I wonder if that's a trend you see, and if you have a lot of engagement on capacity and committee issues, for example, with the legislature. Why don't we take the gentleman here as well?
Samuel Denny Jones. I was wondering what your view is about whether the removal of the head of the FCC has completely crippled the organization. And secondly, what you think and what your views about what the correct relationship between the head of the FCC, the FCC, and the Attorney General's office, because that's a critical one.
Yeah. It's a good one.
Matthew, Dr. Matthew Zuckerer, I'm a professor at Bowie State University. I have a two-part question. The first is, your presentation focused more on the Northern and the Niger Delta areas. I'm wondering whether you've done any work in the East and the West, and whether those who reside in those regions have the same optimism about Nigeria's progress or future that you expressed. And secondly, given the penchant of Nigerian politicians to not play by the rules, what else could INEC have done? The problem isn't it really one of cultural service, but from the aspect of democracy, it's still relatively new. And so what else could INEC have done, given the penchant of the political class for to not play by the rules and to subvert the system? Thank you.
Okay. I'll do the EFCC one first, I think, because Sir Abadu's on training leave at the moment. I believe he'll get his job back. The problem is the President has to be in a strong enough position to be able to do that, and I don't think he's in that position just yet. But he didn't sack him. And that in itself was a certain amount of power on his part. So I think, hopefully, we will get him back. The relationship between EFCC and the Attorney General is tenuous, to say the least, and there are some problems there. Again, I think President Yar'Adua is showing weakness in the appointee for the Attorney General. It wasn't his appointee, that's for sure, and that's causing the problems that we have at the moment. They do have to work together. They're going to have to show they work together. And that may be another position that may need to have to change as time goes on. The one thing, and it links in with what you've been saying, Matthew, is that they are pragmatic, if nothing else, Nigerians. And it could be the Attorney General may suddenly find a new lease of life. bit like a born-again Christian, really, and he might find that he's a Yaradua man suddenly. So these things do happen. And it links into the corruption and what you say. Yes, they do it, and it is part of their makeup. There is no doubt about that. I talked to a senator in one visit, and he told me that during his election, he goes out and he buys food and drink and presents for the village that he goes into so as they'll vote for him. Not something I could afford to do, and I tried to explain. I was like, that's terrible. You're buying your votes. He says, but if I don't do it, somebody else will do it. And I can't argue that point. And he was a good man. I know he was a good man. I could tell he was a good man by speaking to him. I says, but you spread the corruption. Okay, we're not going to get rid of it overnight. And we have to educate people. There are a few people who are now coming in that may be ones for the future, as they say. And hopefully they'll take them on to another step. Corruption you can't get rid of right away. And there's a lot of work to be done by the Attorney General's office. I can understand why you would have one. I just don't think at that point in time Nigeria needed an Attorney General. EFCC needed a free hand. Of course, that was a problem. The free hand was going to arrest some of the people who are sitting in good jobs in the government. And we know that. Your issue was on
Parliament,
the Parliament, what we do. Our group is a link between Nigerian politicians and our politicians. That's the way we see it. It's like a triangle. They can go direct to government if they want, or they can come via us to test the water, as it were, and we can set up things. We use it for business as well. Businesses, Nigerians, and don't have the best reputation in the business world. I'm sure we've all had their emails offering us millions of dollars, therefore the reputation of Nigerians is poor. So businesses sometimes come to us and we can link them in and we can give them direction to people to talk to, and we can use the contacts we have within our own High Commission and people in the government to check out whether it's a legitimate business or not, or whether it's just another scam, or is it, what do they call it, 911 scams, or 491 scams. Absolutely brilliant. I mean, if they put as much effort into doing these things as they do work, they'd be millionaires in their own right anyway.
Judy Yasuni. I'm currently with SAIS. Before that, I was a peace activist in the Niger Delta and was detained by the Nigerian SSS for 6 weeks because of what I knew and who I knew, what they knew. Since then, I've been an informal refugee, I believe, in the UK. And as I see the effects of the high oil prices and the whole concept of fuel poverty that's coming into the UK, and the fact that the UK government is going to begin subsidizing heating costs for hundreds of thousands of people because of the high cost, I look at the effect in the economy here, and then the effect on people in the Niger Delta. I've been working with a lot of people on the ground in the Delta who absolutely, as you say, have nothing. What does it take to inspire the UK government, perhaps in collaboration with the US government, to take a strong hand? I've spoken to FCO, I've spoken to the British High Commission in Abuja. The reaction always is a polite refusal of any external help. Now, how far does it have to go, and what can we do? Still respecting the sovereignty of a country, but also recognizing that I think in reality we have a responsibility to protect people on the ground in Nigeria and people who are suffering from the high cost of energy here.
Okay.
This is to some extent a follow-on from that question. My name is Deirdre LePin, and I'm an independent consultant who has worked on the Niger Delta. You mentioned that you felt that the current president should launch an initiative for the Niger Delta that will bring a tangible result, and that this will, and he needs to sell it to the people, and also that you felt that the U.S. and the U.K. could join forces in assisting the government in general in its initiatives. Have you given any thought, or has any member of your team suggested any sort of initiative of this nature for the Niger Delta, and what the U.S. or the U.K. could do to assist?
Okay. And one more in the back.
My name is Anthony Onugu. I'm interested in finding out if you start with, if you did look at the evolution of the National Assembly in Nigeria. The reason I ask this is I've had a chance of working with the National Assembly there, partly with the NGO Coalition on the Freedom of Information Act, from the old assembly, and a little bit with the current assembly, and also on some issues to do deal with the Convention on Battles with Diversity. I'm interested in finding out what you think has the quality of the representative. Has it improved? Was it worse than the previous one? I say this because very often there's a lot of focus on the process, on the processes, the flaws, the obvious flaws with the election. But I seem to think that too often we neglect the fact that this process itself, flaws are flawed as it may be, seem to have thrown up some very interesting people in leadership positions in the National Assembly. And I think that is a very important point that seems to be badly totally neglected. I wonder what you think about that.
Okay. Judy, you know more about that area than I do. I know that. Strong hand by the US and BT, UK. Look, we have a problem. We were the colonial masters for years. And to use an example, Mugabe used that against us to ensure that South Africa would not give them any problems and let them get on with his elections. The old colonial power is gone, and the worst thing that the UK government could do would be to try to resurrect that kind of do-as-I-say attitude, the gunboat mentality. We can't afford to do it. We couldn't do it. Our relationships with other countries within Africa and our relationship with Nigeria, for that matter, is good. And it's taken a lot of years to get it as good as it is. I understand your frustration, and particularly down in the Delta, and I can only imagine what your 6 weeks must have been like. And I do appreciate what you're saying, but looking at it from a government point of view, there's no way the British government would get involved in that kind of strong arm. The worst thing we might do is we might introduce some kind of sanctions if they did something particularly bad. But I don't see anything more than that, and I honestly don't think the American government would do that either, particularly if the British government wouldn't do it, considering the relationship that we have with Nigeria compared to other countries. So sorry to disappoint you in that way. We do have influence and we do try and use it, but we do try and use it diplomatically, and it isn't going to get any better than that, I'm afraid, in that respect. On the initiative for the president, and it doesn't really matter. There's an example of a very good water project that was done between ourselves, I think, the American group and the Canadian group in Whittle, which is just outside Cano, of where we fixed their generator. We got the water pumps working. They now have tap water that they've never had, and the communities in the area, which covers five different councils, We even got the council's degree. They would pay for the upkeep of it. So that kind of success is the kind of thing we want. It was a big thing to these people. I know people, we take it for granted. You turn the tap on and water comes out. Well, when you watch the kids going down to the water with their plastic buckets to get the water to take back to the village, meanwhile somebody just 2 or 3 feet away are washing their clothes and another one is having a bath in the same water that you're taking back to the villages, then running water through a tap that's been purified by pumps and then pumps around the area is something that's really important. It's not that big to us, but it means a hell of a lot to these people. And if you'd seen the faces, and I don't know if we've got a photograph in there of the dinner we had, or the lunch we had with the all the villagers, and everybody just wanted to thank us, although we didn't do anything, of course, but I was willing as a politician to take the thanks. But they were so pleased with the work that Diffidin, which from our side had done, and for all the help that the others had done. And that's the kind of thing that we're talking about, more of a tangible success story. And like most politicians, you put them in the press and you put them in the papers and you try and get a lot of publicity out of it. And if the president could do something like that and be in charge of it from start to finish to make sure it worked, then he could get a certain amount of, I think, credit for doing it. And that's... Now, I've written down help government.
This is the third question?
Yeah.
The third question was on the evolution of the National Assembly.
Oh, right. Oh, yeah. Freedom of Information Act. Yes, causing somewhat of a problem in my country at the moment. The freedom of information has been poor. I mean, the one thing that they haven't done is audit trail. When the money goes to the federal government, where does it go? And how much goes down to the different levels? And that's always been a problem. When the finance minister, Ngozi, was there, she started a process of trying to audit trail the money that was given from the oil companies and try and find out where it was going federal-wise down to state level. And what she got for her efforts was a promotion to the Foreign Office, which just happened just before an election. Of course, the money was obviously required for other things. So that's the kind of thing that's been going on in government. It appears that every time we get somebody who's good at a position, they get moved. What we hope is that they'll come forward and that good people will get jobs and they'll prove to do it right. Do I think they're better now than they were last time? No, I think it's worse this time than it was last time. I think this election was more flawed than the previous one. And therefore, as a result, it must be worse. The people who have been elected are worse than the ones before. The only thing that's really good, and it's the saving grace of the whole election, was one civil president forward onto another civil president and without bloodshed. So that's the big plus. The next election is a make or break for Nigeria. They have to do better next time. They don't have any... There's no ifs or buts or maybes about it. It has to be a better election. And if it's as bad as the last one, then I think then we will be talking about an imploding fledgling democracy, and we'll be back to where we were with somebody taking over with the help of the army. But the good thing about it is at the moment the people talk about elections. They don't talk about armies or dictators or anything like that. They actually talk about the elections, and that's why they're so disappointed at what happened. The good thing, the tribunals have overturned some of them. But we're hearing today about another one. They're going to rerun an election. And the president and is it Abu Bakr have decided who's going to win it. Now, they haven't even rerun it. The people have to have a say. And that's why I say it's worse now than it was in the last one. We need to sort that.
Can I follow on that?
Oh. Okay, sorry.
Let's have a chat. Yeah, my name is Fidelis Sigibu, and I'm a Washington DC writer. First and foremost, MP Robertson, I would like to thank you very much for your interest in Nigeria, and especially the Niger Delta people. I was born in the Niger Delta, and I remember that in 1960, just before independence. You know. I don't know if James Robertson is related to you.
No.
But he was Governor General. And I remember that even the colonial masters, you know, did not know the conditions in which the people lived. They had divisional officers, but these officers, I don't know if they were telling the leaders, the government, you know, what the people in the Niger Delta were suffering. And I'm just wondering if you have drawn the attention of the Nigerian president and the leaders of Nigeria to the conditions under which these people, the Niger Delta people, live. Because I remember we had to paddle in canoes to go to the next available school. There was no school in my village. And the Methodist High School I went to was about 600 miles away from my village. And the same situation still persists. I went home and I found people still paddling from one village to the other to go to elementary school. I mean, it's ridiculous. And the same water that people defecate into is the same water they drink. I mean, we should get these things, you know, right. It's just not good for them to continue.
Okay. Tim had a question. You had a follow-up. But let's
I think his question was answered.
The question on the capacity.
What did I miss?
On the National Assembly, the evolution, has it become perhaps a more powerful, I'm kind of paraphrasing, but can it serve as an effective force, even on those questions of transparency and auditing and so forth? Are you seeing evolution there? Let's go to Tim and then.
Thanks. Tim Docking, IBM. You've talked quite a bit about the corruption. One can only imagine the amounts of monies that are coming into the treasury there. Is there investment going on? Is the state putting any money back in? And what role is the business community playing in Nigeria right now? Are they vocal? Are they part of the problem? Are they becoming part of the solution?
Okay. The evolution. Yeah, probably the actual assembly probably is more powerful. I think when they stopped the president getting his third term, that was a brave thing to do, really was. And they now have muscles they didn't know they had before. But while they've got that kind of clout, as it were, if they're all corrupt and they're not representing the people, then the power is being misused. And that's the sad thing about it. Time will tell whether they do misuse the power or they don't, but certainly in relation to the people that were elected, a lot of them were elected or probably weren't elected, but probably were nearer the mark, but they got the result they wanted and they're in position. Nobody will know how the election was run because nobody will ever find the ballot papers. That's if there were any ballot papers in the first place. So that's, but yes, it has evolved into something, and if we could take it another step forward, that would be great. Conditions in the Niger Delta and whether people know, this report, along with the other two reports we've done, goes to the president, it goes to all the people we meet, it goes to NGOs, it goes to any groups who contact us. We'll send them a copy of the report, and it's available on the web now. We also send it, that's Nigeria I'm talking about, we also send it to friends of the group. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean they're British or whatever. Could be anywhere in the world. We'll send it to them. We send it to the Prime Minister. We send it to the Foreign Secretary. We send it to the Secretary of State for DFID. And we send it to every single MP and every single member of the House of Lords. So our legislature, everybody that's in it, gets a copy of the report. Can't force them to read it, but they all get a copy of it. And it's amazing how many people come back and said, particularly the picture, as they said, of me in a dress at the front. So somebody gets it and somebody looks at it. So, but we send it out to a lot of people. Now, what you say strikes a chord with me about, do these people actually know what's happening in their own country? Because I spoke at a conference in Lagos in December, and it was about servant leadership. The president had made in his inaugural speech about servant leadership and how it was important that leadership should be for serving the people, and I I took part in the conference and made a contribution. The guy who was from the Foreign Office who works over there was a local boy, and he was there to make sure I was taken to the airport and brought from the airport. And he said to me that, see the story, and I told him the story about Widow, and I told him the story about Idosaki, which is another village just outside Abuja, who have been promised everything and received nothing. And I went into the state of the way people have to live, and he says, do you know, these people have never seen that. These people don't know what you're talking about. They live in Lagos and they've never gone out of Lagos in their whole life. I said, and they were pleased I'd done it, and they said, thank you for taking interest. But they hadn't seen the squalor, they hadn't seen the deprivation, they hadn't seen the kids going down with their buckets to fill up the water and take back to the village another half of it. They hadn't seen anything like that. And therefore, I suppose there's a certain amount of denial that it doesn't exist. But we try and take the message to them, and we hope they listen. Certainly I had a good reception at the conference. Whether it made any difference, time will tell. In the case of investment in business, I don't really know. That's probably the best question. I know banking is certainly taking off, and if you read the reports, that Nigeria is a sort of boom area in the financial sector. In business itself, we visited the Guinness factory. Not because they make drink or anything like that. I don't want anybody getting the wrong idea. Just because I'm Scottish, I mean, you can stereotype people, you know. But we went to the Guinness factory, mainly because it's one of the biggest ones in Lagos, and they have to have their own generators because the power. If there's a single thing that I've, and I've told the President this, and it's in this report, and I've told anybody else that listens, if there's one single thing that Nigeria can do to improve their lot in this is business, is to sort out the energy problems in the country. The President took on the role of Energy Minister. If he could solve their energy problem, build the power stations, they've got all this natural gas they could be using instead of flaring it. They've got plenty of oil where they can get revenue. They're not investing the money. Nigeria, I believe, was at one time the breadbasket of Western Africa. They grew everything in other areas, bought it from them. Now they import their food. They don't make it. Now, if you take the cost and the money that you see from oil, and albeit it has gone up, but before it had gone up, it worked out about $2 a day for just about everybody in the country. Now, that's not going to take them out of poverty. And it certainly is a waste of time giving them all $2. So the money should have been invested in building up their food and agricultural trade. I don't know what natural resources they have, but I'm sure they'll have some somewhere that they'll be able to work. They have an oil that could have created industries. They could have built up the power stations that would allow them to create the industry that the rest of Western Africa would only dream about. And they didn't do any of it. All these people who have made money in the back of oil and the poor could have made a lot more money if they invested the money properly, and they didn't do it. And I still don't see any signs of that happening. And yet, I'm sure I'm not the only one that's ever told them that they have to invest in the future of their people.
We're just about out of time. A couple of years ago, we did a report on governance and security issues in oil-producing states and the problem of with gas prices going up so high and losing the leverage. Perhaps the opportunity to combat corruption comes more from incentive programs than from punitive programs, since we don't have that kind of leverage. And one of the big possible incentives was kind of working in cooperation on rural electrification programs as well, which is something that you hear from every Nigerian they want and they need. It's not happening. But can you use that as the promise of that is some kind of incentive for reform and investment of their own, kind of matching investments, for example, in the sector.
The trouble with Nigeria has been plenty of promises and not an awful lot of action, and that's a lot of the problems. What they have to do is go and do something, build something. prove to the people and then sell it to them that this is the way forward. And until there's a government who have plenty of money, it's not that they're short of money, they've got the money, they've got a resource. A Nigerian compared to somebody from the UK, if you try to compare them, the kind of people they are, if the Briton was driving his car and it broke down, he picked up his mobile and he phoned the garage to come and fix his car. If a Nigerian's car breaks down, he gets out, he looks for something that can help him fix it, and he fixes it there and then gets back in the car and drives away. Now, if that kind of entrepreneurial skills are there, and the skills to keep these cars going are there, then surely that can be developed into making that person an engineer or a decent worker. Because they have, I mean, they're the happiest people I've ever seen, considering they have absolutely nothing. But they have an ability, and they still have, thank goodness, some kind of spirit that they could take forward. Harness that and get them into real jobs and invest the money in there. And I'll tell you, the companies that invest in that country and can get that kind of commitment from the government will make a lot of money. And then there'll be a lot of other people who will make a lot of money in the backs of that. But until somebody actually realises there is a human resource there, if it's a labour-intensive industry, go there. There's 140 million people, and they're all dying to do something. And they're the kind of nation that could be used to do that kind of work. Certainly, agriculture would strike me as a labour-intensive industry, and they've got people there that can do it. But you have to set it up first, and you have to give them that target. This is what can be done. This is what could be done. The problem with the gas station, the flare, is there's these head cases down in the south of... This is where I get a bit... I'm now stacking a bit, talking a bit faster now as I get a bit emotional. But there's these head cases in the south of in the Delta. Who would stop you building these power stations? Who would deliberately sabotage the gas pipes that would go to them to keep them running, so that they would keep the money? And we need to stop them too. It's a bit of chicken and egg, I'm afraid. What comes first? Does the power station and the work come first, or do we have to wipe out all these militia people before we can build the power stations? And the answer is, I don't know. I hope it's the former, not the latter. But there has to be a way forward. And the person who can control the country and make them do that will be a president worth supporting and following. And the companies that get involved and help finance these kind of projects will do very well out of it. In the future, and then we won't be talking about the Niger Delta and all the problems. What we'll next be arguing about is what are they going to do when the oil runs out, because we'll need to move into something else. So that's something they'll have to cross when they get to it, but hopefully by that time they've realised that before the oil does run out, they'll use it to do something with the country and not siphon it off to somewhere else. If I can just say one thing before we finish, can I thank everybody for coming again. Lizzie's got a bundle of cards, business cards. If anybody wants one, feel free to ask for one. The emails are on the front and back of the cards, and Lizzie's got an email address. Feel free to send me any information you want. Things like this book, and thanks very much for the book. We do read these things, and we do take on board everybody's information. We can't do much about a lot of it, but we do use it where we can. And if we have discussions with various people, then we use the information we get. And I always say to people, before we go a trip, I go around all the people who've given me information, asking them if there's anything particularly you'd like me to ask the people I'm going to meet. And that's how I get all my questions. I'm not that clever, but a lot of people aren't, and I know how to harness those people. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much. Please continue.